Sick of being upsold at gyms?
My guy, you're currently a base member. For $90 more, I can upgrade you to our Shred membership. For $130 more, you'll be a swole member. And for just $300 more, you'll reach Sweat Platinum.
At Planet Fitness, you'll get energy without the upsell. Never pushy, always free fitness training and equipment for every workout. It's fitness that fits your budget. Join Planet Fitness for just $1 down and $10 a month. Cancel anytime. Deal ends Friday, May 10th. See Home Club for details.
Hi, I'm Rachel Hampton. I'm an editorial assistant here at Slate, and I'm your host for this season of Working. For the next few episodes, we're going to be focusing on influencers, taking a deep dive into an industry that's changed from one that was really only understood by teens to one that's now covered by journalists at the New York Times and The Atlantic. This week, we're talking to the founders of Obviously, Mae Kurowski, and Max Domain. Obviously is a platform that connects and represents influencers with brands, and they're basically the people behind the campaigns that we see on Instagram. They work with brands from idea conception to the final post we see on our timelines, and as pretty early entrants into influencer marketing, they have a really great idea of what it takes to make brand campaigns successful. Mae joined me here in the studio in New York, and Max joined over the phone from San Francisco. So what's y'all's name and what do y'all do?
So my name is Mae Kurowski. I'm the CEO and founder of Obviously. We're an influencer marketing company. We're both a technology platform and a full service agency, primarily working with the world's largest brands.
And hi, I'm Max Domain. I'm the CTO and co-founder of Obviously. So I make things happen.
That's a good way to describe it. Thank you so much for joining me in the studio today. I'm really excited because this is one of the parts of influencer industry that I don't quite understand. Mm-hmm. So my first question is, where's the name come from? And what exactly does the Obviously platform do?
The name Obviously comes from a blog that I started when I was a social media manager at Gilt Group. It was called Obviously Social. And a lot of social media managers in New York read it quite frequently. And I was like, oh, that's actually a good name because it really gets stuck in people's head. So once, it's like it's an inception. Once you say obviously, everyone you're talking to keeps saying the word obviously, and then they catch themselves. So we're like, this is going to be good. We should keep this name. And then we dropped the social from the name once we decided to completely focus on influencer marketing and build out the tech platform. So what the tech platform does is it makes it really easy to work with hundreds to thousands of influencers at a given time, while really maintaining that connection and that relationship with each individual influencer. Because they're people, they're not just ad units, and they're really psyched to work with these brands. So we want to make sure they have the best experience possible, and also that it just goes flawlessly while still being able to do that at scale.
I always like to call the platform a superpower platform for us to be able to work with tons of people without lowering the quality of the interactions with all the influencers that we work with, but while enabling us to talk to a lot more people at the same time. So it's our superpower platform. That's how we call it.
So tell me the story of how this platform and this company came to be. You said you started as a social media manager. I guess what's the origin story?
So I was working at Gilt Group. I was a social media manager there. It was a great time to be a social media manager because brands were just investing so much in their own presence online. Instagram had just come out. Mm-hmm. That was back in the day. We were doing so much on Facebook. There really weren't even that many ads on Facebook yet. It was all about organic growth through brand pages. And so many of my friends were starting to create cool startups and were asking me to do their social media strategy. So I was like, oh, this could be awesome. I'll start a company called Obviously Social, and we'll just focus on social media management. And one of my first clients was Uniqlo. And
wow.
Yeah, which is, I love, they're awesome.
Yeah, it's like I buy so many clothes from Uniqlo.
Totally. So they had the slogan Made for All at the time. And they had these Airism shirts, which, plugging Airism, but like best $8 you can ever spend.
Yeah.
And they gave me, I was like, oh, you know, if I could give out 1,000 of these and have people post wearing them and really encompassing the whole idea of Made for All. So let's get a really cool grandmother and the kid on the skateboard in Soho and, you know, the woman who lives in the Midwest, all of these people to wear it and talk about it and post about it. I can then use all that content and put it on Uniqlo's Instagram account. So we did that, and it worked really, really well. And, you know, growth in their Instagram really spiked. At the same time, we realized just how hard it was to get out 1,000 t-shirts to 1,000 people. And so at that point, I knew Max. He's in San Francisco. We kind of only talked on the phone for the first, like, what, 6 months, Max, of working together?
Yes.
And we're like, hey, how do we actually make a platform that would make it really easy to give out 1,000 t-shirts to 1,000 influencers? And, you know, that was about 5 years ago now. And we kind of hashed out the plans for that in about 3 hours. And that was really the basis for the company. Yeah. And then it's been kind of a crazy growth since then.
That's a really productive 3 hours.
We like to get
it's funny. It's funny because it was really a regular call about a few months in of us working together, trying a few ideas. And it's one of those phone calls that started, you know, like nothing. And then we started getting inspired about what could be. And, you know, 3 hours later, we had a full vision for what was going to happen. And, you know, fast forward a few years later, a lot of that vision is the core of what we've built and what we're doing today. So it was really interesting to see that pivotal moment.
Yeah, that sounds really cool. So you started about 5 years ago. Influencers have really become more of a thing in the past 5 years. Like, it's been really exponential growth.
Right.
Were they really called influencers when you started? And what have you seen the industry change over the past 5 years?
Oh, yeah. When Max and I decided to just solely focus on influencer marketing, the main reaction was, what is that? What are you focusing on? What is that? So there is, you know, it was really kind of blogging at that point. But what we were seeing was, you know, wow, Instagram's really picking up steam and normal people are creating, you know, these really vibrant communities around the content that they're creating, whether they have 5,000 followers or 500,000 followers. Like, this is going to be the new celebrity. You know, this person is their own little publication, and they're using a free platform. That's so cool. Like, what else do we do with this?
How would it look from an influencer's perspective if I was to, I guess, join the app? Like, how do you get influencers onto Obviously? Do you reach out to them? Do they reach out to you?
Yeah, so we both have inbound and outbound. We have about, you know, 1,000 influencers every week just signing up, hearing about us from their friends. We get a lot of influencers like working with us. So there are a lot of referrals, which is, you know, what we love to see. And then we do a lot of recruitment for very specific types of campaigns with specific brands. So for instance, we have one running sneaker company that wanted influencers in Japan who haven't run in the past year, but like want to get back into it. Very specific type of person. And then also make sure that they're really on brand and their aesthetic is very much what the brand, you know, thinks is their customer.
We put a lot of efforts in matching them with the right campaigns and vice versa. There's a lot of tech and a lot of processes that goes into it. And that goes a long way with the word of mouth on, you know, in the influencer community, which is kind of a small world. Everybody knows each other. So, you know, the more effort you can put in putting the right campaigns and the right brands in front of them, but also making the tool really easy for them, really limiting the amount of tediousness and efforts they have to put into it, because there's already a lot of production costs and production effort that they have to put in every post. So I think we're pretty well known for making that process easy and being one of the easiest platform out there for interacting with a brand, really.
So if I were a brand and I had a campaign where I wanted to find 200 influencers to promote this product, take me through the steps of making that campaign from approaching y'all to the very end post made by influencers.
Yeah. So, you know, I think one common misconception is with especially brands who haven't worked with influencers is that they think that it's going to be really easy and straightforward. And we're like, it's a lot more like herding cats than you'd want to believe.
Yeah.
So we start working with a brand. We find out, hey, what are your goals here? You know, do you want really awesome content to power your ads? Do you need to drive foot traffic to a cool pop-up that you have at Coachella? Do you have a really, you know, awesome new product that you want to get in front of a very specific subset of customers? So we kind of hash that out with the brand. And figuring out the strategy up front is one of the most important things that we can do when working with a company. So we come up with exactly what we want the influencers to do. We create a creative brief, and then we make sure that we have the right incentive. So, you know, if you're a brand and you want 25 awesome photos and one video, like, we're going to make sure that we're not just giving them a pair of sneakers to do that. So yeah. Making sure that, and also we have like the best influencers possible to work with that brand. And then we get that creative brief in front of a bunch of influencers that we've handpicked, and we know the brand's going to be excited about them. We start just having conversations, making sure that the influencer like is really excited about the brand and the product. I think that's huge, making sure that they are genuinely psyched about what they're going to do. I think we've all seen really bad influencer marketing where you're like, ooh, that's a stretch. Like, they should not have promoted that. That was
not, like, I don't believe you actually use that.
Exactly. So making sure that they're actually like true fans of the brand, fans of the product. We make sure we answer all their questions and make sure that we're all good to go and that everyone, you know, it's like a submarine, you know, the brand psyched about this person and then this influencer psyched about this brand too. And then we get the content. You know, sometimes the brand approves it, sometimes they don't, depending on you know, what the creative brief and the strategy is. And then influencers post, we measure and see, like, okay, what worked really well here, what didn't work well here, according to the goals of the brand. And then, yeah, we optimize and we say, okay, let's keep working with these influencers. Let's not work with these influencers. We saw, you know, moms with children ages 2 to 5 who live in these states, like, their content was awesome and performed extremely well. So let's work with more people like that. And so then it really becomes, you know, a true marketing campaign where we figure out what works and what doesn't, and we keep going from there. The idea is to really build a network of influencers around a brand. So it's not like one post and you never hear about that influencer talking about that brand ever again. If they really like them, we want to make sure that, you know, they become a true brand ambassador.
So how do you match the influencer with a brand? Does the influencer kind of say, I would love to work with brands like a sneaker brand or a fitness brand or a wellness brand? Or does the brand say, I want an influencer who does X, Y, and Z?
So it's really a two-sided thing. The brand has usually specific people in mind, specific types of consumers they want to get in front of. And then on the other hand, the influencer has to be just really excited and like, hey, I love this brand. I use them already. I want to recommend the thing they're doing. I am psyched to actually work with them rather than speaking about them organically.
Yeah.
So it's really a two-sided thing. And when it's not two-sided, it's easy for it to be kind of bad influencer marketing. Mm. So you need that genuine authenticity. And I think that word gets, you know, thrown around a lot, but when you have it and it's there, I mean, the performance of that content is just so much higher.
It's a real art, and that's really something that we put a lot of attention to. You really got to make sure that at the same time people are interested in each other and you're not trying to stretch one party towards the other. And so there's a lot of things that go into that process of making people get together at the same time. So there's a lot of things that go into that.
Yeah, what are some of the things that go into making sure they're kind of on the same page?
Focusing on products and really talking with influencer about the products that they're going to talk about is very important, not simply focusing on payments. Showing the brands influencers that are already interested instead of giving them access to giant databases of random people that may or may not match. Those are some of the tricks that go into it.
Yeah, I think another big thing is really figuring out and working with the influencer to come up with what story they want to tell around a brand or a product. And so it's really, you know, here's my ideal road trip in this car, or, you know, here's when I wear this jean jacket and feel awesome, and making sure that it's a true story to them rather than, hey, here's exactly prescriptively like what we want you to do in a way that doesn't ring true. So when your audience is scrolling on Instagram or say they're on TikTok or say they're on YouTube and they come across this post, they're like, oh, this is just like their other posts. This is clearly who this person is. I'm psyched to see. Oh, cool. They're collaborating with Levi's. That's awesome. You know, like that's the ideal reaction. So we kind of work backward from that type of reaction.
That makes a lot of sense. So obviously it's a platform, but it seems like there's a lot of face-to-face or person-to-person communication. How are those two things kind of balanced?
Yeah, definitely. So I think that's kind of our secret sauce element, is that we have this great tech platform that makes it really easy for us to work with a lot of people, but each individual person feels really special. and they know that when they ask a question over email or text, they're going to get a response right back from their account manager, who usually they know pretty well and they've worked with previously. So the idea is kind of, how do you scale relationships and make the people at the brand feel special and also make each influencer feel special? And I think that as the space has really grown, the strategic element has become so much more important. And we're actually doing way more strategy than we were doing, 3 years ago when people were just testing it out. And they're like, oh, let's just send out a bunch of products and see what happens. I think now the space has advanced so much where they're like, oh, cool. Like, what are we doing that's like cutting edge? What are we doing that audiences are going to think is awesome?
It's funny because the strategist in our team is somewhat famous now when we go to event. That rapport between influencers and the strategist is really important and really put them almost at the celebrity level in the influencer community sometimes.
That's incredible. I would never think that kind of a brand strategist would end up being a celebrity, but that makes sense when so much is based off of how well like a campaign does. How do y'all measure if something's working and if it's not?
So it really depends on what the goals of the brand are. If it's, hey, we really need to see direct sales from these posts. We're looking to see did this product move? Are we able to sell this product? Which influencers are selling the most of the product? If it's more of a brand awareness play, how much engagement did this person's post generate? And who are the people who are actually engaging with that content? If the brand, just is really hungry for awesome photos and videos online because they, can't create enough of them fast enough, we make sure that content they're getting is the best and it's performing really well when they put it on their own channels.
It seems like y'all are really on kind of the forefront of what brands want to do in terms of ad campaigns now. Mm-hmm. What are some of the general, I would say, directives that you would say brands have started adding in more? I guess from a consumer's perspective, I've seen brands start looking for more diverse talent on a more consistent basis, or they're looking for not necessarily like Kim Kardashian to mm-hmm. support them. They're looking for someone who's smaller. But are there any other general trends you've seen brands just really kind of go after in the past few years?
I mean, I would say that the trend towards more diversity and trying to see the average consumer and all shapes and sizes and what that consumer looks like is a quote unquote real person rather than just a model is something that has been really warmed my heart in the past few years. I mean, when we first started the company, a lot of fashion and beauty brands were like, oh, we basically just want models. We want models who are also on Instagram. Give me the Instagram model. And we're like, we're not a model agency. Mm. We literally have a lot of people who are just genuinely really cool, interesting people who, look like however they look,
yeah.
And the fact that brands are like, that's awesome. Or we want more diversity, or these posts are too beautiful, or these people are too fashionable, or
wow.
they're too one thing. Let's get a ton of different perspectives. That has been, just awesome to me to really see oh, wow, this is now, a normal person who is, a high schooler in Tulsa, Oklahoma, can actually, be the face of Uniqlo, in this ad campaign on Instagram. Who would have thought?
That's really dope.
Right?
Yeah. You've seen brands actually say, this is too polished. We don't want that.
Yeah, that's actually happening quite a bit now. In 2019, the big thing, I think especially with TikTok and looking at how, Gen Z uses Instagram and creates content that has way fewer filters. You don't have to look, super polished and, you're about to walk a red carpet. Brands are like, oh, that's a little bit too polished. We want more someone just normal, raw. That was a random selfie they took, which I think is really cool. And the opposite of, when I was in high school, everything was airbrushed to to the point of not recognizing anyone. And I was like, who is that celebrity in that ad? I can't even tell. So I think that's awesome.
And it's crazy how people engage with this content. Before it was really just beautiful and very polished content. But, on TikTok, the engagements are just huge. It's just so many.
Judy was boring.
Hello.
Then Judy discovered Chumbacasino.com.
It's my little escape.
Now Judy's the life of the party.
Oh, baby, mama's bringing home the bacon.
Whoa, take it easy, Judy. The Chumba life is for everybody. So go to Chumbacasino.com and play over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Hi, this is Dahlia Lithwick, host of Slate's legal podcast, Amicus. If you're listening to this show, you might be interested in Amicus's live show that we're hosting in Washington, D.C. on Tuesday, May the 14th. My colleague, Mark Joseph Stern, and I will be talking to some amazing guests, including Sherrilyn Ifill and a sitting state Supreme Court justice, all about how originalism, a relatively recently invented way of interpreting the Constitution, has taken over the Supreme Court and radically reshaped the law. It's been doctrinal rocket fuel for the conservative legal movement and facilitated the rolling back of abortion rights, the expansion of gun rights, and the obliteration of the separation of church and state. And as another wildly consequential Supreme Court term careers to its end, the court's originalists are on a tear. But there's something you can do about it, and we hope you'll join us in D.C. on May 14th to explore the possible pathways out of the current situation. Go to slate.com/amicuslive for tickets.
Tell me a little bit more about TikTok. I feel like that's one of the platforms I was really interested in kind of going to this season because I don't understand it. I think it's maybe the first platform that I just am like, okay, we're not gonna understand what's going on there.
I know. It's the first platform where I'm like, okay, May, you need to study this because like you're not in high school. Like,
exactly.
This might not be for you, but you need to know it. So I was like, I've crossed into a new age category. And I think a lot of brand managers honestly like feel that way too. They're like, tell me more about this TikTok. And they're like, well, you should download it and then you're gonna waste 5 hours.
Yeah.
Yeah. You're gonna go down a wormhole. So get ready. Yeah, I mean, I think it's really interesting in that it is short form looped videos and the tech behind it is actually so sophisticated in terms of understanding what you're going to like, what you're going to respond to, and what you're not, that it seems really simple and straightforward, but it's actually, there's a lot going on in the back end of that app. And also, it's pretty hard as a creator to do a 6-second video. You know, it's like that, there has to be a little narrative arc, and usually it has to be pretty funny. And even though maybe it's not the most polished thing ever, and it's usually, you know, some high schooler like in their room or in their living room, or, yeah, you know, like on the football field, the mid-dance, it's hard to actually make like a whole little story in that and to get really, really good at it and to have ideas around like new 6-second videos all the time is actually such an art form. So it's cool to see that there's this whole new group of creators that's doing something totally different than, you know, maybe a more staged Instagram photo or something that's a little bit easier to create on a daily basis.
So a lot of people on TikTok are a lot younger. What is it like working? Are there different rules for working with high schoolers than I would assume they are working with, you know, adults who are legal?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, we have some great lawyers to make sure, and we make sure no one's signing anything that they, you know, aren't legally able to. And we talk to a lot of parents, too. I think that's a big thing about why relationships are so important, is because it's one thing if you're talking to, you know, a 30-year-old and asking them if they have any questions around a creative brief. It's another thing if you're talking to a 16-year-old who's also on the phone with their mom and making sure, like, are you comfortable with talking about this beauty brand and in this way? And do you understand what this means? So I think that that's why the relationship aspect is so key. But yeah, all these young people like want to be influencers now. And that it wasn't even a thing, you know, it was like everyone wanted to be an actor or musician or like someone famous in that capacity. Now it's like I have high schoolers coming up to me being like, how do I become an influencer? Like, how do I get that next brand deal? Like, how do I get, you know, where I'm making thousands of dollars or can not have another job? So it's a pretty cool conversation to be having. It was just an industry that didn't exist like 5 years ago.
It's like a Wild West.
Yes.
Yeah, and those platforms grow so fast. We're going to see more pop up. It's going to be very interesting to see next year, the year after that, what's going to be big. This one grew in just a few months, especially in the U.S.
I mean, we have one influencer we work with. She has 3 million followers. She's 18 years old, and she's growing by 20,000 followers every week.
Wow.
You know, that's just growth that it's not possible on Instagram or YouTube. Like, you just, it's...
Absolutely.
It's impossible. So there's a big opportunity here.
That's absolutely crazy. At what point in a platform's growth do y'all kind of sit down and say, all right, we have to understand what's happening here? Because I feel like new social media platforms kind of come up every so often, and you're like, I remember Peach was a thing maybe like 6 years ago,
Peach.
But like,
oh, yeah,
it didn't become a thing. So at what point are y'all like, all right, this makes sense for us to invest time and understanding, and this platform is probably going to be a bit of a dud.
I think there are a few things. One is, you know, what type of content are people creating on it? And is that something that makes sense for brands to get involved in? I think a good example of that, there's, you know, there's like a social network that just launched that was like totally like uncensored. I was like, no brand is ever going to, and it was shut down like the next day because people were selling drugs on it. So you're like, okay, cool. Like,
makes sense.
Yeah. Moving on to the next. We're good. I think another thing is really understanding just, are they going to be competitive? And is this a place where, you know, this platform is going to be around for a while? I think a lot of Americans didn't realize that TikTok has more employees than Facebook. You know, it is like a giant company, and they're, you know, they want to buy Snapchat. Like, they're in it to win it. And there's a real like muscle behind that. And so we were like, okay, that's very interesting. And then just like, can people really grow? And will people stay once they're on it? Mm-hmm. So we were tracking a lot of user behavior when they get on the app. And then because the users are always there way before the brands. I think like only now have brands really, and we started doing a lot of brand work on TikTok. Before it was like, let's just make sure this is a viable thing for influencers and that the platform wants influencer marketing to be on it. I think that's a big thing. Like, there was a real moment where we thought Snapchat was going to be a lot, there's going to be a lot more influencer work there. But they really came out and said, We don't want to support influencer work. You know, we want brands to become publishers and have channels on Snapchat. And there's going to be very little reach and growth. You really can only communicate to people you actually know. So we're like, okay, cool. I guess we're not going to do much here.
How much do y'all kind of think about the ethics behind these social media platforms? Like, I think about TikTok, which is owned by China and has kind of their own scandals with like privacy concerns. And then Facebook had that big Cambridge Analytica thing 2 years ago. As a brand that's really involved in social media, how much thinking goes into like supporting these platforms?
I mean, I think about ethics all the time. I was a philosophy major and studied a lot about like ethics and bioethics, and did a whole, like my whole thesis was on bioethics. And so I think about it on a very abstract level as well as a very practical level. And I think that's really why we focus on, let's make sure that the creators we work with know what they're doing. They are in control. And, you know, they can say yes or no to any brand work at any time. And let's just constantly reevaluate what we're doing and how we're working on that platform. And if we feel good about all of that, and these influencers feel good about what they're doing, then we're good. But let's kind of always be evaluating, because, yeah, it's been a crazy time in tech in general. You know, it's not just social media. It's literally like every tech company that's pretty big has been embroiled in a lot of issues. You know, like, we're just in 2019, we're in a crazy time.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Wild.
I mean, the big idea is always to be transparent and kind of have the open conversation with the influencers, with the brand. We talk about this all the time. There's so much happening, not only on the platform level, but with brands that you might want to work with or don't want to work with, which happens often. So, you know, we turn down campaigns, we turn down brands when it really doesn't match our values. And that's important to have somewhat of a compass. So we talk about it often.
Is there anything that would make y'all kind of say, we're not going to work on Instagram anymore because it's done X, Y, and Z?
Hmm. I mean, yeah, I'm sure there is something. I'm sure they would do something. it's in the realm of possibility that like something would happen. We're like, oh, we're not gonna do this anymore. I think that's why we're always looking at what is the next platform. You know, how do we diversify in a way that makes sense for influencers and for brands, just to make sure that, yeah, you know, things change and there are a lot of companies trying to navigate and figure out the social media landscape in general. So let's make sure we're always on the right side of that. But it's super evolved. I mean, it's just the space is evolving so quickly that a large part of my time and Max's time is dedicated to figuring out, okay, like, where is this platform going? What is happening on it? And how do we make sure that, you know, we're doing the best job possible?
This idea of influence has been here for a while. And, you know, it's going to take many shapes and form. And Instagram is one of them, and, you know, we hope it's here to stay, but there's going to be other ways. TikTok is one avenue. There's going to be other platforms. There's going to be other ways people are going to do this. What has happened over the past few years is this realization that not just celebrities can actually talk about, you know, cool products and cool brands. There's this idea that, you know, it can be decentralized as long as you can manage the conversation with tons and tons of people at the same time. So that can take many shapes, many forms, and we're actually excited to see what's next. How's that going to look like in the next few years?
Yeah, I think one really cool trend that we're seeing is that brands are wanting to do a lot more in real life, like IRL activations with influencers. So whether that's, you know, they have an experiential pop-up or they have a really cool dinner party and they want to, you know, meet with the influencers face-to-face, form real relationships, and really have it be about, hey, this is this person and this is the type of content they create and this is the type of person they are. They could go on any platform at any time. Like, we know them and we think they're awesome and we just want to have a relationship with the person behind the account. And I think that's been just such a cool trend to see. I mean, we're all there for, like, you know, really fun, cool parties and actual in-person campaigns.
Like, those are the kind of things that I think actually make a brand seem real versus just, you're trying to sell me something as my corporate overlord.
Totally.
The thing about Instagram and social media that is really, I guess, cool to me is that it seems like democratized fame in a way. And that seems like the influencer industry in general, in that there's kind of a low barrier to entry. And it is, as you said, decentralized. But what are kind of some of the pitfalls that you've seen come along with that model?
I mean, I think one thing that's really interesting is now, you know, a large percentage of the world's population has a camera in their pocket and can literally document their entire life if they wanted to. Like, when in the history of the world, other than, like, you know, people who are really into drawing, has that ever happened?
The cave drawings.
Exactly.
Went viral.
You know, yeah, the most influential, like, you know, cave painter. So, yeah, I think that we're in a really interesting time just in terms of that and the fact that you could document your entire life. And the more content that you create that is high enough quality, the more your audience is going to respond to it and your audience will grow in size. I think we're getting to a point, and you see this with a number of very large macro influencers, where they're just creating so much content and they're also growing up as people, that we're kind of entering an unknown territory where it's like, okay, you're 21. You've been doing this since you were 15 on YouTube. And you've been, you know, like, the Dolan twins came out this week and they're like, we've been creating a video like once a week since we were 14. Like, we just need to step away from this like crazy schedule and this demand from our followers to like really see into every aspect of their life in a way that it's like, wow, that's, yeah, no one has ever had to deal with that before. Yeah. Like, you know, like, a celebrity doesn't deal with that. They can, a film star can, you know, make a movie and kind of come pop into the public frame and you know, go on the Tonight Show and do whatever else they do and then retreat back to their like home in LA for a while and chill out. I think now people who are influencers, because of these social platforms, because of their documenting their day-to-day presence, it does raise the question of like, cool, what next? And like, what does this mean for you? And that's, I mean, it's been a really cool, interesting question and challenge to work through. I think for a number of influencers, it's, hey, let's, you know, create a brand. Let's, you know, do you want to create a clothing line? Do you want to create a makeup line? Do you want to create a shoe line? Do you want to create like an iPhone case line? Whatever it may be, but like, you know, or do you want to create a content publication, or do you want to go on tour? Like, there are a lot of different ways to kind of parlay this enthusiasm around your brand on the social platform. Let's just figure out what that means. And what does that mean in 2020 and you know, going forward? So it's pretty cool because it's unwritten.
Yeah. I've noticed a lot of influencers like Jackie Aina and like Bretman Rock partnering with like Anastasia Beverly Hills and all these other brands. And that seems kind of like the end goal for a lot of influencers now, where it's less like, I don't just want to be selling this product. I want to make this product. And that's like a really cool change.
Yeah. I mean, a lot of these influencers realize that, wow, I have a platform. You know, like, I say I'm going to be on this street corner at this time, 20,000 people could show up. You know, it's just like, whoa, okay, cool. I have some real power and sway here. What does that mean? And I think the jump to becoming an entrepreneur is so cool and so admirable. And we're all here for it. So we're like, hey, how can we help you do that? You know, like, let's, you know, we've built a business. Like, let's help you do the same.
So you mentioned that you and Max's time is kind of spent on thinking about these platforms. But what else does y'all's day-to-day look like? Like, what's a day in the life of a CEO and a CTO obviously look like?
Every day is pretty different. I think it's always a balance between thinking really high level, pretty abstract, what is the future of Instagram? And then like coming back from lunch and being like, oh, hey, like, you know, this brand wants to do XYZ. Are we able to execute in 2 days? Like, do we need to hire someone to do that? And just kind of getting pulled back to the minutia that is also super important. So it's really that balance of like super macro and super micro and then kind of volleying between the two.
I think that's what we enjoy. I mean, we complain a lot about it, but we really enjoy kind of tying both ends, you know, being able to think big and sit back and say, even bigger, what's the future of influencer marketing? And then go back. And for me, it's go back to coding, go back to programming and spend my days building more of the superpower platform, you know?
How's y'all's days changed as the company's grown?
So I used to have around 8 to 10 brand pitches a day.
Wow.
I mean, I was like, Max can tell you, he like didn't talk to me until like at least like 9 or 10 at night. I was the only salesperson and I was just like really running around at kind of a crazy pace. But I really loved that because I could hear exactly what brands' questions were, what they were interested in, what they weren't interested in. And hey, like, what are we building in terms of, you know, the brand work that they want to see? So that was awesome at that time. I think now it's all about managing the people who are doing that and making sure that we're doing right by the brands, we're doing right by the influencers, and we're growing in the smartest way possible as these platforms change and as marketing departments at these brands change too. So it's really cool, like complex challenges all the time. And then it can make your brain hurt and you get tired and then, and then you have to take a nap and then you're good to go.
The nap's important.
I know, exactly. Sleep for success.
Yeah.
It's a fun exercise though, going from, you know, the two of us hacking it out, really finding solution, coming up with those grand ideas, you know, fast forward a few years later, how do you make this a real large company? How do you actually go after the market in a very, you know, big way? And it's a completely different exercise. How do you find the best talents, you know, on both coasts? Because Bay is in New York, I'm in San Francisco. And how do you build a team that really mirrors your values, your work ethic, your vision of the space? It's not an easy exercise, but it's a fun one.
Yeah, I'm really curious. How did y'all scale up? Like, what was the business plan when you first started? And how many employees did you start with? And how many do you have now?
I mean, I started in I started in my apartment and we had 4 employees and we were doing social media management. And then when we really, you know, the True obviously came to be and Max and I started working together, we were 4 people and we're just... I think we knew from the beginning that we needed to really understand what brands wanted and what they were willing to spend on. And then also at the same time, understand what influencers wanted to do and to be able to make those two things work together. We've seen a number of companies come right out of the gate, only focus on what influencers wanted to do. And it's like, well, that's great. But also like if we then can't get them any brand work because brands aren't willing to sign up for that, that doesn't work either. Mm. So it's really about the balance between, you know, how are we showing the most value to brands to really get them excited to work with these awesome creators who have built their followings out of nothing and making sure that we're structuring deals that an influencer can be really excited about too. And it really benefits them and elevates them rather than, you know, there's any perception of them selling out in any way. So it's always kind of been that balance. But I think really going after large brands who really want to experiment and really understood the space and understood the importance of having like really awesome influencers tell their stories and not just the brand telling their story themselves all the time was huge and was really the key for our growth. I think the other key is that we were so tech focused from the beginning and that, you know, Max just built something that worked extremely well.
Thanks.
Yeah.
we're also very focused on hiring, you know, experienced people and keeping our teams smaller than what it would be on average in any other company. And the idea there is to be very reactive to a space that changes every day. So having teams that, you know, are not just set in their ways, this is what I want to do, this is exactly what I'm going to do in the next few years, but having teams that are able to kind of adapt to whatever is needed this year to actually answer the problem at hand, which is, you know, brands need to activate new types of influencers. Brands need to work in a different way. Influencers actually need more help with the tediousness of working with a campaign. So being able to constantly reshift, you know, our focus has been really a key focus on how we grow our teams.
Can you say a little bit more about influencers needing help with the tediousness of the campaigns? That's not really something I've ever really thought about.
I mean, the ability to, you know, work with us without having to do multiple back and forth with, you know, their posts, being able to give them some very clear creative brief, some examples on how to work, giving them some easy tools to present their work to the brand so they are pre-approved before they post. Everything that we can do to limit the amount of time they have to spend with that interface and really focus on producing the best content that they can, really having a genuine experience with the product or with the brand themselves. That's the kind of tools that we're building, you know, on the influencer side. We really always like to say that we deal with the complexity of dealing with the brands when we're talking to influencers. And when we're talking to brands, we're really trying to deal with the complexity of talking to 100 to 100, 500 influencers on the same week so that they all do the same thing at the same time. So that's what we try to solve.
Yeah, I think a really good example of that is we were working with influencers and realized that it was really hard for them to know when they were going to receive their packages and then if, like, it was the right size shirt or if it was the right color lipstick or it was the right, you know, makeup palette that they wanted or, you know, hey, this is, you know, golf clubs and I'm left-handed and I need a left-handed. Like, what, you know, whatever yeah. man might be, it's clearly not going to be authentic if you're, like, not using the right-hand golf clubs. So we actually decided to own that entire process and we have fulfillment centers where a brand will send us all of the product that they want to talk about in a campaign and then we'll actually send everything out to the influencer so we can really report back very quickly, very simply, hey, you're going to receive this package on this time or like, hey, what color do you want? What size do you want? And then they can send it back to us really easily too and do it all within a time frame that makes sense for a campaign. That's something that sounds, you know, kind of like a random detail, but it's actually extremely important when you're working at scale. And for these influencers who might be working with numerous brands at the same time, it's a huge hassle if they don't know where to send something back to. So we're just kind of like, how do we just take each of those things and just like make them that much easier and that much more seamless for the influencer? That ends up saving a ton of time and we get a lot of goodwill in return. So that's great.
Yeah. They say, I want to participate. And 3 business days, they get a package, you know, on their door. We built a mini Amazon fulfillment pipeline right there. And it's been fun to build too, from my side.
Wow. When did y'all build that? Like what in 1 year in the company did y'all decide, oh, we definitely need a fulfillment center?
That was very early on, right?
Yeah, I think it was in the second year. We were realizing that usually there was pretty tight timelines on the brand's end, but also a lot of marketing teams actually couldn't mail out the amount of product that you think that they would because their warehouse was attached to their e-commerce team and their website, but it wasn't, you know, the marketing team was like, I don't know how to mail a package. Like, honestly. Or, you know, like I was pitching like 8 brands a day and I was like, why are there so many boxes in the marketing team's like area? And they're like, oh yeah, I was here to like 11. I was like boxing up stuff. And I was like, would you work with more influencers if you didn't have to literally stay here till 11 at night? And you know, there's like a single tear rolled down like the junior marketing manager's cheek. And she's like, I would love that. I would work with so many more people. And we're like, let's do it. Let's do it. We're ready.
Oh my gosh. She saved and so many people.
They would wait the last moment too. They would wait for everybody to have given their choices and their addresses. So we always were running after that, you know, after time because it was always last minute. But yeah, and that first fulfillment center was my apartment.
I know. And he was like, it's not a warehouse, May. I'm like, it is a warehouse.
It is our warehouse. Yes.
You call it your home. I call it a warehouse.
That's cute. You think it's your home.
Yeah. Wow. So at what point do you think you kind of went from the mindset of this is like a small business to like this is a big thing?
I mean, I think even from that first Uniqlo campaign where we're like, oh, 1,000 people, cool, this was really great, we really saw that there's a huge potential here. So I think we always had the mindset that this could grow really quickly. We just need to do it right. And we need to understand, and we we need to understand where these platforms are going and what these brands want to do and what the influencers want to do. And I think once you kind of get all three parties heard from and you know, and really understand that, then we can have an awesome strategy and grow really quickly. And I think that's really been the secret to our success.
Yeah, we looked at the pain points and there were so many at the beginning that, you know, we felt there's going to be enough work for years to come, given all the problems that there is. And people were all super excited about it. So we went for it.
What are some of the changes in the industry that y'all are really excited to see?
I think that it's not, I mean, when I would pitch a brand 3 years ago, a lot of the conversation would be around, what is influencer marketing? Is this a legitimate thing? Like some skepticism.
Are you trying to scam me?
Exactly. You know, it was like, and I was like, yeah, that's literally like, you know, I hear all the results from our campaigns. Here are all our like super satisfied brand clients. Here are all these influencers who love working with us. Like, we have a really strong case for why this works so well. And not having to deal with that skepticism head on a day-to-day basis, and instead having brands be like, we know this works. We need to do it in a lot smarter way. We want to be on the cutting edge. We want to do the coolest things possible with these influencers. I think that change has been really validating, number one, but also just really fun to be like, oh, I'm not just convincing you that this works. I'm now trying to come up with the coolest and like best strategy for this brand in particular possible. You know, like brands are coming to us being like, hey, is there an influencer who would want to, you know, make a brand with us? So it's like not only, you know, a collaboration with them, but they're actually like their name is on, you know, every pot and pan or like, you know, are on this bottle of cashew milk. Like, you're like, cool, this is like, I didn't even think of that. Yeah. Like, let's do it. Like, you're getting creative now. I love it.
I'm also really excited about the this idea that the concept of influence is starting to permeate, you know, more social networks, more places, you know, in real life experiences, May was saying earlier, TikTok. But, you know, more and more this idea of influence is not confined to one platform, to one type of beauty or fashion campaign. You know, people are starting to realize, huh, maybe I could do this there. Maybe I could do this for my own brand that is neither beauty nor fashion. And you know, we just scratched the surface there. There's so much that's gonna happen, you know, in that space beyond what we already know.
What are some of the misconceptions that you see brands come into conversations with influencers? You said when you first started, you were kind of explaining, this is not a scam. But are there things that brands kind of think working with influencers is going to be like, that you have to kind of disabuse them of a notion?
I think it's been changing really quickly, and brands have learned a lot about how to best work with influencers. I think, you know, one big thing is having a creative ask from an influencer that's just really outside the realm of like, you know, what's acceptable or like or what they're willing to pay. You know, hey, can you, you know, do 5 videos and edit them all and do that in 24 hours? And, you know, and we're going to have, you know, 10 versions of edits and we're basically going to treat you like, you know, our creative agency. That is something that we'll be like, okay, this is not how you work with this person, because you're not trying to just create your commercial. You're trying to have this person talk about you in the way that makes sense for them and for their audience. And some brands, you know, we really need to educate them on that. And other brands have, like, you know, now really understand that. I think another thing is just really developing relationships and longer term engagements with a lot of these influencers, rather than just doing, hey, we'll work with them once and then we'll like never work with them again, or we'll never talk to them again. I think that's actually, you know, it's really sad for a lot of influencers, because they're like, I'm psyched to work with this brand. Yeah. Awesome. And they're like, did we get any feedback on that? Like, did they like the post that I created? And you're like, yeah, they did. They just didn't respond. So now we're like, hey, no, you need to come up with a long-term strategy of how you're going to work with influencers over the long term, so that the influencers' audiences realize, oh, it wasn't just a one-time paid post. This influencer really likes this brand and they're working with them, you know, 3 or 4 times a year or more.
Yeah. And 4 or 5 years ago, too, I think the big misconception was that, you know, it was going to be easy. Everything's easy and I could do it myself. And we're trying to convince brand that it's actually not easy. And the tech could help a lot there. Now I feel everybody has tried at least once. They understand, that shipping packages and talking to 100 people at the same time, making sure that people really align with the creative brief and the vision of the campaign is not an easy thing. So I feel like that's not a battle we're seeing often. So that's great.
That feels like really vindicating, where you're just like, we tried to tell you.
It's been good. We haven't been too annoying about it. We've just been like, awesome, we're psyched to work with you now. Let's do this.
Privately, told you so. What is it like explaining your job to your parents?
My parents follow me on Instagram, so I feel like they have a good sense of what we're doing and why I'm always running around everywhere.
I feel like the first couple of years, my parents had a hard time understanding what I was doing and were asking me again at every phone call or at every Christmas party. It was like, Max, why don't you tell everybody else what you're doing? Because we don't really know. But now I think they really understand it. They really love it. They're super excited for us.
Do you have a 5-year business plan? And if you do, what are some of the things you got really excited to like put on the ground?
We have so many big plans. I think that one really big thing is understanding what's next for a lot of influencers who've built up really awesome audiences and have like really great communities around them, and understanding what is next for the way they work with brands. And a big thing we're seeing is brands not just working with micro influencers or just working with macro influencers or celebrities, but how are they working with each level of influencer, and how are they doing that in the best way possible over the long term? You know, I think a lot of brands right now are very much in a campaign mindset, but how do you get them to the point where they're like, this is an ongoing part of your strategy? We should have a 3-5-year plan with you, with the brand, and really explain that to the influencers. And so that's the thing we're really working on now, is like, what does that longer term vision look like for brands, and how do we make sure that we're setting them up and educating them and really putting them in a place of success?
And, how do you build teams also that are going to be able to, once again, react to an ever-changing space? How do we don't know exactly what, the space is going to look like in 5 years, but we can actually build teams and processes that are going to make us really good at solving the problem then, and really enabling the brands to take the most out of this space in 5 years. That's a big focus for us.
Seems like a field where you kind of constantly always have to be learning. Like, you can't get comfortable, really.
And that's fun.
Yeah.
I know. I have to be on TikTok for 3 hours. At least every day.
Tough
I gotta,
life.
Gotta put in that time. You gotta understand the meme of the day and make sure that we're on top of it.
I love it. Could you just quickly define the difference between a micro influencer and a macro influencer? Just because I've heard you use that term a few times and I don't know if people actually know the difference.
Yeah. So a micro influencer is anyone kind of under 75,000 followers. At least that's the obviously definition. I think you talk to a few different agencies, you probably get like a different place where they put the bar. And actually that bar is changing. It's usually someone before they get a manager, or before they have a talent agent who is negotiating on their behalf, is kind of the more loose definition, not tied to a follower count. And then macro is anyone above that point. So, they're in it in terms of like, this is a real career path for me. And, maybe they don't have another source of income, and they're just going for it.
And nowadays you have nanos too that are coming up.
Yeah.
What's that threshold?
So that's really under 5,000 followers. Yeah. And so the idea there is, if we work with a large enough number of influencers who have, less than 5,000 followers, but they're all reaching, such a high percentage of their own followers individually every time they post, we can target extremely narrow interests and groups of people at the same time. So say you want to go after, people who are really into mountain biking, and let's find, 1,000 influencers who have less than 5,000 followers, but all they do is post about mountain biking. No one's going to be following that person if they're not psyched about mountain biking. So it's just, so it's all about scale versus size of audience. But usually when you're someone who has a much smaller audience, your engagement is much higher. I mean, sometimes there are people with like 30%, 40%,
oh, wow.
50% engagement.
Yeah.
So it becomes like extremely cost efficient if you're able to manage the scale, which we can.
Yeah.
So that's been really cool to play around with different types of campaigns with different size influencers and different types of audiences. And also different affinity groups too. Like, you know, are mountain bikers way more into like the influencer content? And are they going to buy more mountain bikes than someone who sells, you know, bath towels? You know, so it's like we're learning, we're figuring
yeah.
it out.
Yeah. Have you seen bigger brands want to start reaching those niche audiences more often?
Yeah, definitely. That's been a huge focus for a lot of brands. They're like, how do I just get in front of that group? You know, they're so reliant right now on Facebook ads. They're so reliant on SEM and Google ads, Amazon ads. But, you know, you saturate that at some point. There's like, you just can't spend anymore, or it's not cost efficient to do so. So how else do we get in front of them in a real way? And so that's been an awesome challenge to work through.
It's that decentralization process that is really a continuum. You know, it started with celebrities on TV and then macro influencers and then micro and then... And then, you know, now we realize nano is interesting and there is a lot to do there. And I think it's going to continue. It's just every time your scale goes up, so your challenges in organizing it becomes more complicated, but the rewards are typically better.
Yeah, everything is moving so fast on social media. It's like really yeah. hard to keep up, but I think
it's
that's
crazy.
What makes it really
yeah,
exciting.
You know, it's like every day you're like, what's going to happen today?
Yeah. yeah. When you like reach a point, you're like, oh, I understand social media. And then you're like, nope, I don't. I don't get it.
Once you say that, then yeah. you know,
TikTok comes yeah, along.
Exactly. Then you realize, nope, I'm wrong. I know.
Yeah.
We gather a list of articles to read every week. And it's just a giant laundry list of things that happens every week. You got to read this. You got to check this out. This just happened. It's crazy.
Wow. It's like constantly being in school.
It is. Yeah. Which I love. That's awesome. You know, what if we were in I always say to Max, like, what if we were in like the chemical industry or something like hasn't yeah. changed in like 100 years? Like yeah. what, yeah. like, or crazy innovation only happens, you know, every 6 months. Yeah. Whereas us, it's literally like on a weekly basis.
So my last question is, what is a really common misconception of your job? Like, what's one thing about your job that you wish people would understand, but they don't?
I think one thing about my job that's really interesting and something that I wish a lot more people knew was that every single part of being the head of a company is a learned activity. And, you know, I think there's a lot of, you know, idolization of CEOs and founders, like, and in kind of a weird way, it's like, you're not born into it. It's not a star is born. You know, you're not Lady Gaga. You're literally figuring out how to build a business, what's working and what's not. You're analyzing that. You're figuring out what you're good at, what you're not good at. You bring people in who are good at the things that you're never going to be good at. You improve at the things that you have to. And, you know, you're just constantly figuring out how do you grow this company in a sustainable way. And I think when you explain being an entrepreneur to someone in that way, rather than like, we're the billion-dollar unicorn and I had the best pitch and I was on Shark Tank, like, it really makes it a lot more accessible to a lot of people who I think would be actually amazing entrepreneurs and could be just launching really, really cool companies, but they don't see it themselves as like the natural born leader in elementary school. And so I think that I wish more people would know that. I think especially you'd get a lot more women, you'd get a lot more people in general who are awesome, who could be amazing leaders of companies.
For me, it's, you know, coming from the Silicon Valley point of view, it's this idea that there's only one way to build a startup. It's, you know, to lose money for many, many years and then to get tons of people on your platform and then eventually to figure out how things work. And we kind of took things a little differently where we built a real business and some people are shocked by that. And it's, you know, it's not the same schema as everybody else. It's not, you know, raising tons of money. It's just building a solid business since the beginning and growing with the business. And it's been really key for us to always focus on what's important for clients and influencers and less for, you know, investors or third parties that would, you know, give you a different metric to chase and to go after. So, you know, I always constantly say, you know, there's something into building a real business.
It's crazy. I know.
The best advice is always the one where you're like, oh, of course. Of course.
Obviously. Yeah. Obviously. Yeah.
And that is a great.
Exactly.
Oh my gosh. Thank y'all so much for coming on.
Oh, thank you so much. This was awesome.
Yeah.
Thank you.
That's it for this episode of Working. Thanks for listening. I'm your host, Rachel Hampton. Special thank you to Justin D. Wright for the ad music. Thank you so much to our producer, Jessamyn Molly. Please remember to rate, review, and subscribe on Apple Podcasts. And if you have any questions or feedback, you can reach us at working@slate.com. Join us next week for another episode on influencers.
Save big money on your outdoor project now at Menards. We have everything you need to keep your outdoor power equipment running smooth, so you can keep that lawn in tip-top shape or enjoy some time on your boat. Right now, all FVP, lawn and garden, and marine batteries are on sale through May 5th. Check out our entire selection of FVP batteries today and view our weekly flyer on Menards.com for more great deals. Save big.